So Phil, I got a problem. I've been dealing with some issues, and I would like to air it out, talk about it, work through some.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Have Eric. To work with them. Okay. And they're you know romantic troubles. You know, so mm-hmm. I need some help with that. So there's this girl. Let's call her Mitsuru, right? And I don't know why you're laughing. That's really painful. I've been working really hard to impress her, but she won't give me the time of day until I get my academics up. So I've just been grinding academics. And by the time I finally got to, it was my time I got my academics up for my girl Mitsuru to notice me. Mm-hmm. I missed a chance to go on the Christmas Eve date with her.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
So I just had to spend Christmas Eve by myself. Mm-hmm. And me and my dorm mates and the dog. And then as I was, you know, I finally got our relationship up, you know, to the point where we became a couple and she declared her love for me. But then mm-hmm. I got to know this other girl, who's a robot, like literally.
Literally a robot.
Yes. And then, you know, as we relationship was going up and forward, I was like, oh, you know, she's kind of, I feel, you know, some feelings developed. So I entered into a relationship with her too. Now I was just like kind of two-timing Mitsuru with, I guess that's the robot girl's name. And, oh no, I feel pretty bad about that. So what should I do about that?
You know, Eric, I feel like you should come clean to, Mitsuru and let them know that you've, also had fallen head over heels for an automaton, and you have to phrase it just like that.
Well, see, there's no option for that in the game. You can't. They don't. Unlike the other. Unlike Persona 4 or 5, you don't get the chance to turn them down, or they don't find out. Mm-hmm. I was kind of blitzing through the end of Persona 3 Reload. Did I make this clear that this is just, I'm just playing Persona 3 Reload. These are not actual women.
Mm.
So I just, and the thing is, you know, I love this game. I love that series. And it was starting to, you know, grow attached to them. And I was starting to feel real bad, even though they're just fictional characters. Mm. I don't know. I need some advice about that. You know, fictional characters sound.
Okay. I mean, there is no like right or wrong here because they are fictional characters, so it doesn't matter as long as you don't rob the old lady in what's that planet's name?
You're talking about a different game, Phil, and I can see you were the wrong person to talk to about this because listeners, Phil still has not. He hasn't played any of the Persona games except for the original Persona 3. Never finished any of the games afterwards.
That is also true.
Because he can't appreciate the design of like the RPG with like the narrative elements, how they influence the other, and it's about getting to know these characters and they influence it because Phil only cares about, as he puts it, killing God.
Is that so wrong?
Yes, Phil. You know why? Because why? You see all your games, you only want to indulge in your Bale power fantasy of just like, I want to beat up these things, I want to shoot these things, I want to slice these things. And some of us enjoy the wide range of art that the video game medium has to offer, and is mm-hmm. more willing to enjoy things beyond Doom and Call of Duty and Assassin's Creed. We can enjoy all the different types of storytelling and modes of gameplay we can enjoy. Whereas if this were a comics equivalent, you would be the person that only reads Rob Liefeld and think like, if it doesn't have guns and shoulder pads and anatomically incorrect women, then it's not a comic.
Jesus Christ. I mean, okay, so to be fair, I do like the Persona games, right? I do like the original ones. I haven't played any of the remakes. Except for Golden, which I still need to finish.
As what's happened now as a modern Persona gamer, Persona 1 and 2 don't count because they might as well not exist.
So yeah, see, that's what I'm saying.
You're irrelevant.
I'm irrelevant. I'm an old man. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yes. An old man with your male power gaming fantasy. You want to play outdated JRPGs where you have Hitler in your party.
He's not in my party. He's the enemy.
he's whatever, you're fighting Hitler. I guess they changed one of the characters not black, or they made a character who was made him black and he wasn't black in the original.
Yes, in the first game, yeah, in Revelations, they made him black by giving him the black face and a cap, a baseball cap.
I just want to say, male power gaming fantasy. Let listeners know, Phil is the outdated gamer, and one should. And I get it. You know, you're from this like toxic masculine culture of the streets, where it's all about the juice, and you gotta be frontin'. You gotta beat up people who like step on your expensive Jordans, and uh-huh. you're selling crack cocaine because the CIA is supplying it to you. You know, but you know what? We're not in the streets anymore. You don't have to put up that front. You can be in touch with your sensitive side, your empathetic side, like hooking up with robot girls, like me.
You know, I my God, you left me speechless because I don't know what to say. I mean, I do play a variety of other games too. You know, like I enjoy my Monster Hunters and my Armored Core.
Again, male power gaming fantasy. You gotta like finish your hunt. Look at me, I'm so badass.
It's all for ecology.
Oh, people like me, I'm playing, you know, these games where I get to know the characters and develop relationships and learn empathy. I'm playing Death Stranding, which is real art, right? And you dismiss it only as a post-USPS simulator. And you know what? It's better than any game you'll ever play. That's right.
It's definitely not. It is nowhere near Monster Hunter World and/or Rise.
And this is your male power gaming fantasy confining you, because someone like you originally said to Kojima, it's like, oh, hiding from your enemies, that's not a game. And people listened to him, and they pandered to him. He will never have a Metal Gear, right? The people pandered to you, it's like, oh, I don't want to, plumbers jumping, that's not a game. Yeah, if we listened to you, we would never have Mario and all the stuff that ensued, right?
See, but, okay, so with Kojima's Metal Gear Solid, hiding and running away makes sense because it's a stealth game. But now you give me three games within a series where it's essentially I'm a teenager summoning some sort of god demon thing in order to kill a bigger god demon thing, and they just keep upping the ante more and more. And then now I gotta create social links. I gotta get to know these characters. Why can't I just know them through general gameplay? Why do I have to go out of my way to go and talk to them, huh, and get to know their feelings? I don't give a crap. Let me kill God.
Yeah, and that's why you're stuck playing these Final Fantasy games where you just push your car and it takes you 72 hours to fight a boss.
You would love that game.
Whatever. I'm not gonna push around. I'm not gonna spend my time pushing around a car. That's pointless game. And for people out there, you know what? If you want to be limited like Phil, you like your male power gaming fan. You like your male power fantasy. Then we have a comic for you, because who exemplifies that more than Batman? But see, that's the thing about Grant Morrison's Batman. They lure you in thinking, okay, we're going to get just like, yeah, Batman beats up people, and he's the most badass. And then he just throws you all these other wacky things. Like, what's going on? This isn't the Batman, like, I know.
Yeah, like, you know, weird clowns and lumps of rock things. And
they explicitly skewer that with one of my favorite panels in the comic. It's towards the end, which is...
Which one?
I'm gonna pull it up. I'll show it to you. I don't know the page number because I have the physical edition.
Okay.
But it's when there we go. It's when John Mayhew is confronting the Black Glove, and the Black Glove member goes, nonsense, that's not Batman. Yeah, Batman's cool. He wears black. He refuses to believe that the Batman is acting, though, because he's dressed up in yellow and purple and red.
Yes, but that's not John Mayhew, though. That is
The point is Simon Hurt. The point is, like, they're William. kind of standing for all the Batman fanboys and Mike Stenshin Phil with his limited male power fantasy. So so we're continuing off our Grant Morrison's series on Grant Morrison's Batman, or kind of the climax of the first part of their their long journey on Batman, with Batman RIP partnered with Oney S. Daniel, kind of the culmination of this first, these first two story arcs previously, Batman the Black Dove and Batman Son. What I would argue is like kind of the Grant Morrison's kind of definitive statement on what is Batman, what it takes to be Batman, by ironically killing Batman off.
Right. Which, I mean, it's always one of those things where it's like bittersweet because, like, again, like people are big fans of Bruce Wayne. But I think also it's a nice swan song to legacy characters because, again, I mean, this story came out, what was that, 2008, 2009, somewhere around there?
2011, 2012.
Oh, okay, so 2011, 2012.
Yeah, you're only like 4 years. You're only 4 years off.
No, because New 52 came out around that time, wasn't it?
No, that's not the point. The point of that when it came out is not important. Who cares?
Okay, whatever. But nonetheless, though, it's a nice swan song to like legacy characters. Because again, like if Bruce Wayne were to die, right? Who takes over the mantle? And later on, we get to see that happen to one of the boy wonders who Batman has taken under his cowl, and you know, see them for who they are to become the next one, kind of ish.
Yeah, and it's kind of the lead up to that. So we'll see. We'll just do a quick summary of where we left off of Batman Black Glove, which is you know, the Black Glove, the villain behind Ark, made their appearance by killing off the Club of Heroes, and Jezebel Jett learns that Batman is Bruce Wayne. And then, would you like to fill the listeners real quick with just quick summary of the first part of Batman RIP?
Yeah, sure. So, Batman RIP, we start off with Bruce Wayne. Let me start from the very beginning. All right. So, this comic opens up with Batman talking to the Joker about some weird nonsense out of context. You know, black and red, life and death. You know, the joke and the punchline. And Joker is just sitting there flipping cards and, you know, playing tarot or whatever. And trying to get an understanding of what's to come. Because somehow Joker is involved with the Black Hand as well. Batman is still not really sure. He's still trying to figure it out. And so from there, we get to dive into the actual story. So all of that, it was just weird setup premise for what's to come, you know, giving us a little bit of in media res, right, as the cool kids like to say.
Well, I think it's also like it's an important thing to show that, A, you know, Joker is Batman's greatest nemesis. So if like he's consulting the Joker on who this is, that should say something.
Right. You know, and I think it's also kind of crazy, too, because, like, you know, Joker literally took a bullet to the head and now he's awake and playing cards. So,
And, you know, the thing about the dead man's hand is more twists on the Joker messing with him. But the thing about it is that, like, this story, Grant Morrison, like, he has the Joker, but the Joker is kind of like only a supporting character, which I thought was kind of an interesting move.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of Jeff Loeb before, like, he started doing like really weird comics, the Long Halloween, where the most important character in that entire book was Calendar Man.
I was gonna say it actually reminds me more of Mask the Phantasm.
Oh,
because the Joker is not the main villain; it's the Phantom, the Phantasm. Mm-hmm. But the Joker is like kind of a side character.
Okay.
And then it's also like a follow-up to like the pro story, Cloud at Midnight, which neither of us read.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it's from earlier in the story. So we go into and we see the kind of the Black Glove and this man with all these very colorful characters.
Extremely colorful. We got a guy who likes to go deep sea diving. We got a Piero. We got El Sombrero. He shows up again with his
new so mask. So Piero is like a French clown figure, right? I know.
Yes.
I don't know anything else about that character.
Piero is also, like, they tend to use a lot in opera, as well as the name of the Japanese studio that creates Dragon Ball and One Piece. Let's see. We got some fake Roman guy. We got
Caligula, as they later
was revealed.
Yeah, but it's also like these are a bunch of like new characters Grant Morrison developed to kind of, it's like kind of evoking, you know, Batman's colorful rogues gallery.
Right, because like the Kraken is supposed to be like Bane. The Piero was like what's his name? It's like Joker. Yeah. Caligula is like, I would like to think Black Mask. That's what I'm thinking.
I was gonna say Maxi Zeus. No, there's an obscure character no one knows.
Like, did he ever appear in the comics? I thought that was like an animated series only character.
No, he's a very minor character in the comics, I think.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, and then while this is ongoing, right, the Black Love is gearing up to fight Batman. There's a story breaking out that Commissioner Gordon, this is where Commissioner Gordon comes in. There's a scandal behind, you know, Thomas Wayne and some details that, like, maybe he wasn't. Thomas and Martha Wayne weren't really the upstanding citizens who were gunned down and crying. They were more heinous. Right. Which is kind of funny because this is a storyline that I think a lot of other Batman stories have come out later on that, like, there's always something comes to the
surface. There's always something. Yeah. It was like, yo, Thomas Wayne was a dope fiend and Martha was a crack whore. It was like some dumb stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, and it's like kind of funny, like, the Bat Reason. They kind of played on it too that. Not his parents, Martha Wayne's parents, I think, like, it was like died in like a murder suicide.
Yeah,
just like enough of a scandal that it caused, you know, various things in that movie,
which was also very silly.
Yeah, but so there's like kind of two layers of the Black Glove. I mean, we can assume that the Black Glove's doing that. There's two layers of them, like, they're going to start the other destruction of Batman, not just Batman, but also Bruce Wayne's image and its reputation.
Right.
And then there's also kind of like this slow moment, which I enjoy, is that Jezebel Jett, you know, she's talking with Bruce in the back gate, and she kind of reacts the way a normal person would react to, to, like, if your boyfriend revealed that he's been this crime fighting vigilante. It's just that, Bruce, you're crazy. you've gone really, she also saw her parents killed in front of her, but, like, you've gone kind of overboard. Like, maybe you've just been, like, all these conspiracy theories, this Black Glove stuff, maybe it's all in your head. And he's, right, like, kind of actually experiencing some self-doubt that maybe this is all just in his head. And then Bruce Wayne collapses. But not before there's some kind of subliminal messaging in the back computer hinting that there's something really, really wrong. And then this is where, like, you really want to show the villains are, like, going after Batman. Is who do you go after? You go after Alfred.
Alfred. Oh, God. That poor British man. He never stood a chance. Yeah, I guess he's very powerless without his shotgun.
Yeah, I guess it's Hunchback and these, like, Oni demon themed goons.
They are gargoyles. Because he's supposed to be the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
That's That's kind of a stretch, but sure.
It's really not, though. That they're literally gargoyles.
They look like Oni from Japan, but whatever. Moving on. Okay. Moving on. So then we get... I'm kind of curious how you feel about this part. Is this the part where you start getting confused, Phil? Because
it definitely was. Because, what's it called? Now we go into this, you know, the Bat... What is it? Bat Radia... And, you know, this weird colorful monster with Batman. And I'm guessing these were, like, old school, like, Golden Age, Silver Age comics that have happened. Because we even get to see Batwoman. I was like, whoa. I thought she was in Earth 2.
Yeah, these are all referenced to old Silver Age Batman stories. But it's also the framing device, is as we've established in this Grant Morrison's Batman, is that these are kind of weird cases that he's put in the Black casebook. Right, and then now I think it's actually Tim Drake reading it, right?
Tim Drake
reading it, and, you know, the rest of the Black Glove, the goons are, like, going to ambush him, so they're going after everyone, not just, they're not going after Batman, they're not going after just Bruce Wayne, You're going after Alfred. You're going after.
They're going after Tim, and they're going after Dick Grayson.
Yeah, and then we see, kind of, we wake up. Bruce Wayne wakes up, and he's what? He's in an alley, and he's being helped by this homeless black guy, Honor Jackson.
You know what's just crazy to me? Like, after reading this, I was like, whoa, he's a magical Negro.
And, well, there's a little more, there's some truth to that statement later on. We'll go to that. So, like, Bruce Wayne wakes up. He's kind of has amnesia. And, like, and it's kind of a parallel storyline is that, like, Tim Drake and Dick Grayson, they're being under attack by various members of Black Glove while Bruce Wayne is just wandering homeless. I think he's hopped up on meth, right?
Meth and crack.
Let me rephrase that. Weapons grade crystal meth, which I enjoy.
Weapons, yeah. Like I said, I guess the weapons grade crystal meth is what they used to use in the army. Like, fun fact. So during World War II, on the Pacific, during the Pacific Theater, they used to give crystal meth to soldiers in order for them to continue to fight day and night without rest.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's a real thing?
That is a real thing.
Oh, okay. I thought that was just something Grant Morrison made up. It's like, look, we made like super meth. That's like something that made up. Or it's like that, like in that Simpsons, the McBain parody, they made that super drug swank.
Yes.
100 times more addictive than marijuana.
Oh gosh,
so that's cool. That makes a little more sense now.
Yeah. So what's the man's name? Honor Jackson, yes. Right? Mm-hmm. Honor Jackson. Like they say, even the name that sounds like a magical Negro name, like Honor Jackson, is able to help Bruce Wayne get up and is able to help him throughout the city as we see black and white flashbacks of him muttering Zurinar, as we go through.
It gives him a present, which we don't see it. It's like something wrapped up in that red and black handkerchief. And then eventually, you know, Bruce Wayne's like, wait, Honor, where'd he go? He disappeared. and then the other, you know, people on the street like, hey, Honor Jackson died the other day. He OD'd.
And he was like, what? No, that's impossible. Like, he was helping me out.
Yep, and he's just like, turns out it was a ghost, or maybe it was a hallucination because of, you know, what the Black Glove has done to Bruce and all the stuff he's been on.
Right, which is, I think he also makes an appearance, because he makes his first appearance at the beginning of the story, where Batman is showcasing his Batmobile and is stopping another weird costume, like, Z-grade villain, and the Batmobile stops right in front of him. So that was a nice callback of making him a bit more present.
Yep. And then it's like the end of this issue, and this is where I'm quite enjoying this. Like the Black Glove, they're like bragging that they've been beaten. You know, they got Batman beaten. But what does Bruce Wayne do if Batman's not quite defeated yet? So what is it he does? I'd like to tell our listeners, Phil. That's what I love.
He essentially, like, sits in the alley muttering Zurinar, sewing together a dope fiend's Batman suit, as I like to call it, in red, purple, and yellow, in order to exude confidence. And you got Batmite standing behind him going, uh-oh. So, you know, this Batman is about to go off the rails.
Yeah, this is where whoa, what is this? This is definitely not the Batman people thought they were getting. This is where people need to know, like, what is Batman's armor. So it's a reference to, and they reference it in the comic a little bit. It's an actual Silver Age story where Batman, and I think Robin as well, travel to an alien planet, because that's what Batman did back in the day, this urban crime vigilante. He visited an alien planet and met an alternate Batman who's dressed in like the purple, red, yellow Batman. Yes. And it's just like, it's just another, okay, this is a weird, quirky story that later writers try to forget ever happened. It doesn't make sense with, you know, the Batman of like Frank Miller and Neil Adams, the more Duty Ground the Earth. Brave and the Bold makes a reference to it where he does they play that story straight where he does go to a different planet and meet the Batman of Zarinah.
Yes.
And what's kind of funny is that they make a lot of in jokes about that. It's that like that Batman of Zarinah is voiced by Kevin Conroy. And it turns out his day job is that he's a reporter at their version of Daily Planet, and he looks like Clark Kent. He's voiced by the voice actor Clark Kent. They have their version of Lois Lane, who's voiced by Lois Lane's voice actor. His arch nemesis is like the Zarinah version of Lex Luthor, who was voiced by Clancy Brown.
That's funny.
Yeah. But so there's this like wacky Batman story along with like Batmite, right? People like to pretend they're like this. But Grant Morrison remembers and brings Zarinah back in full force. And so Zarinah just goes to town on the Black Glove. She's just like running around with a baseball bat. And what I really enjoy is that even though this is like the silliest concept of Batman Forever, like the way Batman talks, it's even more like dark and gritty.
Yeah. Which is just because, again, the context of him running around in this red and purple and yellow, and not just like beating up, but like unmercifully beating up these henchmen, right? Like he even goes after the tailor who makes their costumes, in order to figure out who is purchasing the costumes and like tracing it back to the black glove or Black Hand.
Yeah, and it's I really enjoy about this arc is that this is not, you think this is going to be like a Dark Knight Returns, okay, the villains are just going after Batman, he's going to die, whatever. And then just Grant Morrison takes a new turn, a direction that people don't really expect, which is, no, Batman's not dead, he's still surviving in the most wackiest way possible.
Right.
What is your reaction to this film? Because, like, I would like to hear, this is your first time reading this, and I'm a good Grant Morrison fan, so I'm always just on, put my hands on the roller coaster or whatever. How did you feel about the idea of Zarinah and how Grant Morrison is doing it here?
Excuse me, sorry. So, with Zarinah, I mean, because, like, my first instance of knowing who this character was the Brave and the Bold episode of Batman Brave and the Bold. And I was like, oh, that's neat. So, like, reading it this way, like, from the, you know, wacky Silver Age adventure to gritty, realistic alien guy in Gotham. As I am now, I enjoyed it because, you know, it's blends wackiness with the grittiness. So it's silly, but at the same time, it's still grounded. If this was, like, 18, 19, 20 year old me, I probably would have hated it. I'm not gonna lie. But as a much older adult, I'm like, I can see where he's going. I mean, I can see where Grant Morrison is going with it and how they are trying to incorporate all these things, because it's just, you know, paying homage to Batman, but also at the same time trying to elevate it to a next level.
Yeah, this is it's so much fun. And I think this is kind of the ultimate example of like Grant Morrison trying to bring in a kind of the Silver Age silly campiness, bringing it back, but with a new spin on it that's more appropriate to modern Batman. Mm-hmm. And as we'll see, we'll find out what the explanation of what Zarinah is, and kind of the wrapping up of this arc is that Batman, and kind of what's the setup with the mention of like the Thurgol ritual and the isolation tank, is that long ago, Batman, when he was walking the earth in the beginning, he made a backup personality of Batman in case anyone ever tried to brainwash him or psychologically attack him. And that's what this is, the Batman Zarinah coming to light. So, you know, yeah. Batman, yeah, Zarinah, Batman. And that's how he kind of, that's how Grant Morrison retcons the Zarinah. It's like, oh, is it not there? But it's also their plan of playing, they're keeping it ambiguous because Batman's talking to Batmite. He's like, tell me the truth. Are you really an imp of the fifth dimension, or is it just my imagination? And Batmite's like, what's the difference?
Right, like the fifth dimension is imagination. But I think also at the same time, to the how quickly they were able to set up taking over Bruce Wayne's life. So now, okay, because I feel like almost every like big major storyline of Batman has to involve a damsel in who's in distress, but not really. A revealing of his secret identity. Everyone is going after everyone that he cares about, that he's learned to care about now. And Joker somehow it shows up like at some point and any point in time during these stories. And that's what it feels like. So when Gordon goes to Wayne Manor to try and, I guess, talk to Bruce about the hit piece that's about to be published, they go into the manor, cop sees Elsa and Burrow's card, and next thing you know, right, his leg hits a laser, arrows to the head, and now you got Gordon trying to go through this debt trap, making sure he doesn't get hit. That's a lot of prep time, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I feel like this is all happening within like several hours. So for that to happen, it's like, damn, like these people move fast.
I think it's implied that Bruce Wayne has been wandering for a while as Zarin Ha, kind of out on the streets for at least a few days, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? And then, but there is a twist, all right, when you're talking about the damsel in distress, because when Batman is all set and go, has a confrontation with the Joker, Joker has the last laugh, because it's like, hey, you gotta let Jezebel Jett go. And she's like, Joker's like, well, you see, there's an extra thing you're not getting. And it looks like Jezebel Jett's about to be killed off. And it turns out Jezebel Jett was a member of the Black Love. And she like slips off her restraints, puts on the like black outfit and the black like fancy lady gloves.
Yeah.
Yeah. It turns out this is all a ploy, all part of this organization that destroyed Batman, and she was just a part of it.
Right, which kind of reminds you of the Dark Knight, right? Dark Knight Rises. Everyone's trying to break down Bruce Wayne, and then he falls in love with Talia. I don't even remember, like, what she wasn't called Talia in the movie, though, right? What was her name?
I don't know.
But then it was later revealed, like, I'm Talia al Ghul, and, Ra's al Ghul's daughter, and I've come to destroy you, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and it's just like, again, it's like another like one up the Black Glove. That's just like something Batman wasn't prepared for, or so we think. Is that like, oh, the love of his life is also a thing. And then we kind of the denouement of this is that like they buried Batman, right? Batman RIP, they give him a grave. Batman, he's prepared for this too. He fights his way out of being unburied, kind of like in Kill Bill.
Right. It kind of makes you think, right? Like he's using the 1-inch punch that she was using in the movie.
Yeah, it's a similar type of thing. Tim Drake, who's managed to escape, has rounded up kind of the club of heroes, so they come to his rescue. The Bat Radia. Which is also an element from the original Zarin Ha story. I'm not sure exactly what it is. It turns out it was just a chunk, just a broken radio that Batman's been carrying around. Because they know, like, this is how crazy he is. But it turns out, no, he's hotwired it to, like, send out a signal. So which triggers something in the computer of Arkham, which allows, I guess, Nightwing to break free, right?
Yes, because then it started to take over, because the Bat computer took over Arkham. And it gave a chance for Nightwing to wake up from his anesthetic coma that was given to him by the Blue Scorpion.
Yeah, so it's just like, this is kind of the Black Glove. They're losing. Batman has actually prepared for everything, including the thing where it's like, and this is where I do feel it's like kind of an emotional cheat where Jezebel Jett's like, well, you know what? I've used you. I've manipulated you. You'll never love a woman again. And then Bruce Wayne reveals, like, love, big Alfred for the acting lessons. Kind of implying that he was just going along with it.
Right.
This is where I felt I was like a little bit of a cheat that, like, oh, Batman was prepared even for that. Just like out gambiting each other. I find an undercut the story a little bit to have him say that, but whatever.
I mean, it definitely does, but also, like, you know, it, shout out to all the Batman fanboys, because Batman clearly had prep time. He had so much prep time, he was able to make a backup personality to still continue being Batman after being taken over subconsciously, and then, of course, fall in love with the woman, revealing that he's Batman to her, but still at the same time, you know, doesn't feel heartbroken. That's a true soldier right there. I tell you what.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it does make sense in what Grant Morrison is trying to do, which is the ultimate statement of Batman, right? That he, you know, he's, at the end of the day, he's just a human. He's just a mortal man, right? Mm-hmm. But what can a mere human do is prepare for every single eventuality, you know? And that's kind of what Batman has done. He's like trained with all these masters, study every science under the building, learned every psychological trick out there, is a master of deduction. And it's kind of, Grant Morrison taking it to its most logical extreme, which is, you know, going, being so crazy prepared as to have a backup personality.
Exactly. Which is nuts. And then, of course, as this all comes to a head, right, everything comes crashing down. Nightwing was able to get in contact with the Club of Heroes. So we got the Le Masseur, Legacho, Knight and Squire, Dark Ranger. They all pull up from their respective corners of the globe to help Batman. You know, Tim Drake is on his way. Nightwing is able to break out. So him and Batman team up. Okay. All to this final confrontation between
Batman. And then, of course, the other thing. Is that the Joker being what the Joker does, because he's the villain, so he goes and kills the rest of the Black Glove, because Batman doesn't kill, but the Joker is the villain, so it's okay. it's just the thing where, like, the villains always exclude Joker or keep Joker on the sideline, and Joker is just too uncontrollable.
He's exactly, which is like, yo, do you people not learn, like, people have to be dumb in order for the story to move forward.
Well, it's also a Sabbath. They're just like extremely arrogant, I think. And it's like they're kind of like the Man in Black in Westworld. He's just like this thing on the side, and it just goes like, "Hey, F all of you, all your human android agendas. I'm just gonna go out and cause a bunch of chaos."
Right.
Talia comes back at the end of the day to like basically clean up the mess. Like going after Jezebel Jett, which is why we never see her again after this after this arc.
And how did she go after Jezebel Jett?
Ninja Man Bats. All the way
Ninja
back.
Ninja Man Bats.
Yeah, all the way back to the very first issue.
Oh god, Ninja Man Bats. That is hilarious.
So there we go. So that's and then Batman just like kind of chases after them. There's an explosion, dives in the water. And this is where it gets kind of a weird turn. Right, these two issues, the last, I think they're called The Last Rites of Bruce Wayne and The Last Rites of Batman, and they're sort of like a quick like run through of Batman's history. Some moments are faster than others. We start all the way from like Batman's origin, like the famous like bat flying through
the window.
Yeah. I was like, I should become a bat. We see kind of the aftermath of that though, which is Alfred sweeping up the bat, throwing it into the trash
and then burning it on a fire, like, also, which is nuts.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of like these other very quick snippets of, like, you know, Bruce Wayne breaking up with various girlfriends, alternate ideas of what could have been Batman if it had just been something other than the bat.
Right, like we got Mothman, looks terrible. The Sidewinder.
Yeah, Snake. Yeah, and then there's all sorts of, like, I think this is an issue to, like, the very first Detective Comics, so, like, Batman sneaking through with the scientist-looking dude.
Mm-hmm. Who I just always assumed was Hugo Strange, but I guess not.
Yeah, there's another famous shot of some cover at Detective Comics, I'm assuming, of Batman in the spotlight with all the guns.
Right.
Another And it kind of spliced between just all these quick run-throughs of Batman's history are like little things Grant Morrison is adding to show how insanely prepared Batman is. He's that like he doesn't sleep. He just takes micro sleep, like literally seconds of sleep that he does just to solve problems. Which is like something people can do. It's not healthy for you, but that is a real thing, micro sleep. Is that like when the body is so exhausted, like your body will literally fall asleep for like a few seconds to like get a little bit of rest.
Get a little bit of rest, yeah. I used to do that in undergrad. I used to sleep for 90 minutes every 2 days. That's what I used to do.
Not good for you.
It's definitely not.
Yeah, what was your excuse, Phil? You know? It wasn't just because a bat crashed into you. You need to go like solve crime, right?
No, I had to draw comics.
And so there's a more run through of all the greatest hits of Batman's history. You know, finding Dick Grayson. They're joining up. They're doing like their Silver Age antics. Reintroduction of Batwoman into this, like the classic Batwoman from. I don't really know that version of the character too well. It's like. Kathy
neither
Kane.
Do I. Yes. Like, which wasn't that like his? No, wait, that's the other one. Never mind.
Yeah.
I was going to say, isn't that like his cousin or something? But like,
I don't know. It's not important. Kind of intercutting between this, and this is where I assume Phil got confused. We're cutting in between something else going on here. Would you like to tell our listeners what's going on?
Yeah, so Batman is in some type of machine. And we see this character that looks like Clayface. That's not really Clayface. It's called the Lump that they're using to control Bruce Wayne's mind and suggestions. Because then the memories start to change. And we see that Thomas Wayne survives. Thomas and Martha Wayne survives the encounter with Joe Chill. And Bruce Wayne becomes a doctor like his father, so now they're both working at the hospital.
And he's kind of far from the Batman we know. He's like overly pampered. He's got like the polo. He's like Carlton in Fresh Prince. In the beginning, he's got like the pink sweater wrapped around his neck.
Right. But then it starts to get even weirder because in issue 2 now we have those cuts between pampered Dr. Bruce Wayne and Batman, you know, fighting Man-Bat over the street of Gotham. Like, you know, things like that.
Yeah, it's kind of switching into, like, the Silver Age, like the 70s for that era of Batman's history. He's going against, like, Ms. Talia al Ghul. He's fighting Ra's al Ghul, which is the introduction. When the other defining run of Batman is, like, Neil Adams run. And it's kind of going back and forth between, like, Batman sucked up to some kind of machine. There's these weird, like, creature-looking things talking about his memories. Mr. Simeon and something else.
Yeah, the Simeon and whatever this weird spawn-looking guy is. Which, I mean, when I first read this, I thought, like, the Simeon was the Hunchback. Because they look very similar in design. But, like, he just grew out his beard, but like the Hunchback wears a mask. So Eric had to explain to me that they're new gods because this involves Final Crisis, which I haven't read yet. So it was very confusing. I was like, yo, what is happening here?
Yeah, and so we figure, and so what it really is, and this is kind of what I enjoyed, is that this wasn't just a series of flashbacks. This is a framing device of like these two new god dark side minions. They're going through Batman's memories, and that's why we're seeing all these old snapshots of Batman's published history. But there's also like new things, like alternate ideas of what could have happened, like Bruce Wayne, like his parents surviving, so therefore Bruce Wayne becomes this like lame mama's boy millionaire. And it's also like, you know, the idea of like he could have been the Mothman, he could have been Sidewinder, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's like they're going through his memories. I don't know if it's made explicitly clear in this part or maybe in Final Crisis, is that they're going through his memories. And this is kind of, I guess a fault of the narrative is that this has nothing to do with Batman or IV or the Black Glove or anything like that. This is tied into Final Crisis, which Grant Morrison was also writing at this time, ongoing. So right. For people who are reading this, they need to know that story as well, which is, it's just kind of obnoxious for people because that's not collected in this version of Batman R.I.P. So you need to know this outside story. But that's basically what it is that, and I guess, yeah, like, and like, this has really nothing to do with Batman R.I.P. almost pretty much, and it's like kind of goes back into it out of it. But Batman, as a testament to like Batman's fortitude, he manages to overcome this by weaponizing his trauma. That's too much even for the lump or whatever it is. And so he breaks free of this getup that Darkseid's goons are in.
Yeah, to the point where, because the lump is connected to Batman, and then they connect these clones for the soldiers to be used in Darkseid's war. But because of Batman's mental trauma and stress, right? No average person can handle that amount of trauma and stress. So, like, being able to weaponize that and sending those memories into the clones, like, are causing the clones to be traumatized to the point that they don't want to live anymore. Like, they're trying to claw out their throats. They're, like, trying to claw out their eyes. They just can't handle the stress anymore. Because if Batman is anything, you know, he is a giant stress ball who needs a Swedish massage.
Yeah, and it's kind of the other, I mean, it's kind of kooky this is, because this is all tied into another story you need to have been reading. But I think it's also the other part of what Grant Moore is saying about what it takes to be Batman, right? Is that, because Batman is human, right? You can't really test Batman in the way of, like, you could have, like, Superman, these other characters, right? Kind of the things that's, like, something that negates their powers, overcome their limits. Well, Batman's, as, like, the ultimate human, his limit is mental, right? So it's a testament of, like, Batman's willpower, right? He can overcome this mental machine by weaponizing his trauma and his memories. And then it kind of wraps up there and dovetails into Final Crisis, because Batman has to go solve that story now.
Yeah, because, like, towards the end, we have a glowing chalk outline of, it said it begins with the murder of a god. No idea what they were talking about there, which apparently has to do, what does that have to do with again, Eric?
That's literally the opening of Final Crisis.
Okay, but yeah, but, like, who got murdered?
Orion.
Oh, okay, there we go, Orion.
He literally falls. To Earth in an alley, and they make a chalk outline around him, the Green Lanterns.
That is funny.
Yeah, but we'll get into that when we get to Final Crisis. But what are your kind of your final thoughts about Batman R.I.P.? We didn't really talk about Tony Daniels' art too much, but, you know, it's kind of more, I think it's more of the same because we saw Tony Daniels in the last one.
Yeah, pretty much. But I feel like with the person whom we need to really shout out is the colorist. let me see. Who's the colorist on this? Lee Gabarant, I believe.
I don't know. I threw my copy of the book because I thought we were wrapping up on the graph. the colors really stand out because with Zero and Ha, right? Purple, red, and yellow. You gotta make those colors work, because Batman is, you know, as the Black Glove member points out, he always wears black.
Okay. Oh, here it is. It's Guy Major and Alex Sinclair. They're the ones that did the colors.
Alex Sinclair, I know. I think he always colors Jim Lee's work.
Yes, he does. Like, Alex Sinclair is the colorist that they call on whenever they're trying to, like, push something new and good, and, like, superstar artists, is that's who they get. They did it with Frank Miller. It did not work at all. It should have been like a flat color, like something similar to what like Dean White does, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. But yes, so like because of like the inane silliness that is happening, that runs parallel to the serious nature of the story, it just works very well. And I mean, I have no qualms with Tony S. Daniels' artwork here compared to the other one, but you know, that's what it is.
Yeah, it works. And you know, there's a lot of bright colors. Like, it's also a lot of greens with the Joker. One thing I want to make sure we mention before is that, and I think this was touched upon a little bit at the beginning of this with Batman Son, is that Joker's dialogue is all lowercase.
Oh, is it? I never realized that.
Yeah, because like, his dialogue is all green, but it's also all in lowercase. Where it's like, you know, because normally the dialogue is in caps, right?
Yes.
In comics, but his, like, nothing is capitalized, so you see all the letters in lowercase, which I thought was a nice touch. It's a clever way to show that he's off. He's a little off compared to everyone else because he's a Joker.
Right. It was Joker's. I mean, because I, to be quite honest, I haven't read much Batman comics. So is his dialogue always been
green? No, that's just a nice thing they put for this arc.
Ah, okay, that's cool. All right, cool. All right, is there anything else you have to say, Eric?
I thought it was great. It's a great like climax of Batman's, a Grant Morrison statement on Batman. I don't know. I guess people like Phil are confused by it because, you know, you're expecting, oh no, I want Batman muscles and punching, and I said non-linear narrative.
No, I mean, I don't mind non-linear narrative. It's just like instance, like where he like jumps out of nowhere, but nonetheless though. So apparently now this gives us set up for Final Crisis, even though the title is very misleading, Batman RIP. You're thinking Batman is going to die in this. He does not. He dies in the next one. So I look forward to seeing the death of Batman. That's all I got.
Yeah, as they say in the beginning of this, Batman Robin will never die. And we'll see that down the line. But yeah, because now we're going into Final Crisis, which does dive into the Batman. But it's also Grant Morrison's big epic DC story of the DC universe. And kind of, you know, adding on to the legacy of Jack Kirby as well. And tackling New Gods mythology. We'll see how that goes. On that note, I'm Eric Wong.
And I'm Paul Fleming. And this is The Shield.
How is it like The Shield? I've actually watched that show. I like it a lot.
Because it's a police procedural. And Batman technically is a police procedural.